So we are recording. My name is Elise Schrader, and I'm here with Ms. Roxanne Kirby and Christopher Strebe. The date is April 25th, 2021, and the time is 3 p.m. Eastern. This interview is being conducted over Zoom. I'm currently in Indianapolis, Indiana, as is Ms. Kirby, and Christopher is in Janesville, Wisconsin. Ms. Kirby, I want to briefly review the informed consent and deed of gift document that you signed. This interview is for the COVID-19 Oral History Project, which is associated with the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive. The COVID-19 Oral History Project is a rapid response oral history focused on archiving the lived experience of the COVID-19 epidemic. We have designed this project so that professional researchers and the broader public can create and upload their oral histories to our open access and open source database. This study will help us collect narratives and understandings about COVID-19 as well as help us better understand the impacts of the pandemic over time. The recordings, demographic information, and the verbatim transcripts will be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, in the Indiana University Library System for the use of researchers and the general public. Do you have any questions about the project that I can answer?
Not at this moment. Thanks.
Taking part in this study is voluntary. You may choose not to take part, or you may leave the study at any time. Leaving the study will not result in any penalty or loss of benefits to which you are entitled. Your decision whether or not to participate in the study will not affect your current or future relations with Indiana University, IUPUI, or the IUPUI Arts and Humanities Institute. Participating in this project means that your interview will be recorded in digital video and or audio format and may be transcribed. Recordings and possible transcripts of my interviews, copies of any supplementary documents or additional photos that you wish to share, and the informed consent and deed of gift may be deposited in the Journal of the Plague Year, a COVID-19 archive, in the Indiana University Library System, and will be available to both researchers and the general public. Your name and other means of identification will not be confidential. Do you have any questions?
No, not at this time.
Okay. In addition to your signed document, would you please offer a verbal confirmation that you understand and agree to these terms?
Yes, I did agree.
Okay. I'm also asking that you verbally confirm that you have agreed that your interview will be made available under the following license: Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International.
Okay, yes.
And then, finally, I want to ask for a verbal confirmation that you have agreed that your interview will be made available to the public immediately.
Yes, that'll be fine.
Okay. Yeah. Right, so we have that all out of the way, and so I'm going to start with the questions.
Okay.
So when and where were you born?
March 7th. In Indianapolis, Indiana.
And what was it like to grow up in Indianapolis?
Okay, say it again.
What was it like to grow up in Indianapolis?
As a young, I think it was pretty nice, more family-based oriented, like the neighbors would always look out for each other, you know, and pretty much like neighbors was just like family. The community was all like family oriented. So if anything happened, then they would always connect with each other and like barbecues and, you know, that stuff, nature. Yeah. It was pretty nice.
Would you say it's pretty similar living in Indianapolis now, the same feeling of community and like neighbors helping out?
Somewhat. It's a little different because more people now seems more private. You know, they don't want to get involved. It just all depends on what's going on. But for us, our family, I think we're pretty much a tight-knit family, you know, when it comes to birthdays and barbecues or, you know, celebrations or holidays. It's pretty good.
And are there any communities that you're a part of?
Well, I know I did graduate from Morton University as alumni, and so they usually have different meetings weekly and just give us a lot of updates. So, like, they have different events for the community, like serving, like, the food giveaways or just different events that they have there at Martin University. Yes.
And so you're currently a teacher's assistant for the pre-K classroom at Sankofa School of Success. So how did you come to be there?
I previously had worked there as a classroom teacher assistant, and I had left there. At that time, I probably had like 10 years experience, and I had also decided to go back to college, and that's when I went to Martin University and continue on with my education and receive my master's degree, bachelor's, then my master's in psychology. Yes.
So what was it like teaching in the classroom pre-COVID?
It was a big change, of course, you know, just making sure everything was always clean, sanitized, which Ms. Schrader and I, you know, make sure of that, you know, and just going over the procedures with the children, you know, 4 and 5 year olds, just, you know, making sure the good hand washing and, you know, before they eat, making sure everything is cleaned off and sanitized before eating, and sanitizing the toys, and the whole classroom has to be cleaned and sanitized daily. Yeah. And also, well, the difference also, eating in the classrooms, because before they had to eat, we would walk them to the cafeteria. So now we have to eat in the classroom, snacks and breakfast and lunch, and making sure that we were so many feet, you know, distance away from each other. So one on one end of the table and the other. So there's a difference versus everyone, you know, maybe four at a table is only two at a table.
So it was around March 2020 that Indiana began shutting down because of COVID. Can you remember what your first thoughts were about the pandemic when that first began to happen?
I was kind of nervous about it, you know, especially, you know, because I really think, well, not only just me, others was always, you know, thinking too, I wonder if it started really way before the end, because some, you know, some children, not just at our schools, but other schools were, you know, we're thinking maybe they just had a cold or something. So there were children that might have been had to stay home because they wasn't feeling well without knowing actually what was really going on at that time. So it was a big difference. It was kind of scary too as well, you know, because especially when some of the children, you know, not just our classroom, but other classrooms that may not have been feeling well, and then all of a sudden they say, oh, you know, children are staying home and have to go to the doctor. And also the difference too was when before entering the building, we do have to take their temperature, you know, make sure they have a face, their mask. And if they don't have one, we have it right there to make sure that every student that walks in have their temperature checked and have their mask on and the hand sanitizers at the door.
So what issues most concern you about the COVID-19 pandemic?
Hopefully I don't, you know, get it, because, you know, you're trying to be cautious about it, but sometimes you can still be cautious, and you just never know, you know, because even though they don't really know what's really made actual caused it, you know, because if it's, you know, some people I know, they did everything possibly, keeping their hands washed, covered, and there were others that still end up with it, you know, because when we went virtual and then they were coming back, I think it was after a break, that the parents had a choice to either stay virtual or come in person. So they gave them options to see if whatever the parent wishes were.
So you mentioned going virtual when Indiana shut down. So what was the hardest adjustment for you going virtual?
Learning how, basically learning the technology, that was for me, you know, just knowing what to do, how to share, and, you know, especially when I enjoyed working virtual from home, because we did have to go home for a while, and everyone was home, and then the transition of going back in person, you know, even though the students' parents had a choice, you know, either way, what they wanted to do. Because once the parents already have been set, you know, they already get the, you know, childcare providers and, you know, just a big change for their schedule. But I enjoyed working home from virtual, you know, and just seeing the, you know, the children, all of them on virtual and being able to share the, you know, the movements, breaks and lunch breaks and sharing with, you know, how they feel, you know, because also the concerns was how was the children feel and how do you feel today, you know, so that kind of helped a lot, letting them know how not just the teachers, but also the students. And we appreciate the parents who also was there with our, with their child, grandparents, you know, and parent dads was there, you know, helping out with the children with their technology as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned talking to the students about how they were feeling. Mm-hmm. How hard was it for adjust to them? How hard was it for them to adjust going virtual?
I know some students, they like, we really miss being in school. We really want to come back. You know, Ms. Schrader, we really want you. We love you. And it was kind of hard, but we try to bring, I like how Ms. Schrader had taken the some of the materials that we did in person and brought it home so that they won't miss out on the things that we did. And then when we did come back into the building, she would, they were still home, but she would come into the building and she would just, we did a, she had like, well, both her and I both came in and how they, she would say, okay, this is what housekeeping looked like, the kitchen looked like, this is what the hallways look like. And that really, you know, so that they can get familiar when they come back into the building and so that they can say this, because I don't think we was able to get to show them actually, this is where the where you're going to have gym, and this is the art room, and this is the playground. So that was a way of introducing them. So when they did come back in person, they were familiar and really know their boundaries and stuff.
Yeah. Since the kids are so young, was it hard for them to understand, like, the severity of the pandemic? Was it hard for you to describe, like, what was really happening?
One thing I can say that the majority of the students, the parents had educated them before they came in, you know, and then they were, we had like different songs that we would play about, you know, how to keep your hands washed and why, you know, why you wear your mask. And so they were pretty well educated at home. And so when they came back it, to school, they were pretty much, reminded, because every day, you know, especially on Mondays after the weekend, we kind of remind ourselves, who can show us what we do? Do we just run and do this, or do we just walk and just put the soap on? And so they, you know, so we just practice the routine, so we pick our student to show us how to do that, or how to be kind, or, you know, especially when dealing with emotions and all that as well.
So you've mentioned that you guys have gone back in person, but there are still some parents that decided to have their kids learn virtually. What challenges, what was it like to like teach in person and virtual at the same time?
It was kind of challenging a little bit. We had to learn, Ms. Schrader and I would try to see what fits best for us. So we had, she would have her, the schedule. So at a certain time, she'll say, okay, Ms. Kirby, at this time, we did. Now, one thing I can say, when we did large group, we all were together. So she would have her laptop there where we could always sing, look who came to school today. And then we would clap our hands and then we'd tell them what to do. Stand up, turn around, do a little dance and sit back down. So that way the virtual students were also included in the large group while we were in class so they could see each other. And they were all familiar because when we all were virtual, they said, oh yeah, that's so and so, you know, so that was a good thing. So everyone was familiar and, always included in the large groups. And then when we did, like when we go to specials, we do, bring, she would bring the laptop the Nippon, I think, to the gym, so they, or the art class, and so they have a way of setting it up where they can still see what was going on in the classroom, so they're not left out. And at lunchtime, they may be able to decide that they may decide to, like at the lunchtime, she may put the laptop right by certain students while we're eating, and while we're all having lunch at the same time, if they so desire to stay on. So that way they can still talk and say, hey, how you doing? You know, still have that social skills going on. Yes.
So what were you most excited about to go back to teach in person?
Just seeing their, I always say, I love seeing y'all smiling faces, you know, just being able to come. And even though, you know, it's kind of hard to say you couldn't hug, we do elbows or, you know, or just a finger wave or something. And just for now, but sometimes, like, if they just come, we might turn aside and just, you know. But it's like, okay, well, you know, glad to see you and, you know, all that good stuff. But it was kind of hard, not especially when they want to hug. Now, if they're not feeling well or something like that, then we just, you know, we'll still communicate, of course, and just see how do you feel, you know. And we do have a quiet place if they need to rest. And if they're not feeling well, also we had, we do have the nurse at our building. She's an RN. And so if anyone gets sick, we just call the nurse and let them know that this student needs to come down. And so we would, one of us would walk her down, that student down to the nurse. And if they are real sick, then we have a station where they, you know, students that needs to wait, like a quarantine room for the students till the parents get contact.
How would you describe the effectiveness of your school's response to COVID?
I think it was pretty well. Yeah, they were pretty informed because we did have meetings in the camp, in the gym, you know, if we had any concerns. And then they also had videos and letting us know, you know, also we had to have the training, the do's and the don'ts, and pretty much making sure, again, you know, letting the custodians know or the front office know, like if we run out of certain hand sanitizers, wipes to clean the desk off. We all had that good contact and informant to let us know, let them know that when we're out or not yet. And we did have, I'm sorry, have that training. And I, what I also like is on Thursdays, it's like we get a half day for the students, go half day, but we're also, that gives us time to go over lesson plans and things that we might need to change that may not, you know, work or may not work. Also, when we have the mental health break, we get like a 1 week mental health break during that time as well.
So is there anything you wish that would have been done different?
I know that when as a person that, let's say a classroom individual in that classroom had COVID, they couldn't share with everyone in the school. You know, they could just say, well, someone, they did send notices home to the parents. And, of course, that's a nervous thing for everyone. It's like, okay, someone in here has it or whatever. But they would notify the parents and let them know. But they did, whoever was in contact with the individual, those were the only ones that were, you know, had to stay home for 2 weeks. I think it was 10 days. But it was kind of scary because you just don't know if you say, well, wait a minute, I was with that person for 5 minutes. But I think it was a 10-minute rule or 15-minute rule. If you was with that individual for so many minutes, then they would tell you couldn't come back for 10 days. Even though they didn't have symptoms, but just because maybe a family came in and maybe they had it. And so that was a concern with a lot of, you know, staff because they like, well, they was in specials with, and that the whole family was there. So, you know, it was a scary thing because everyone's like, well, we don't have the symptoms, but they still was precaution to make sure that they stayed home for 10 days. If they didn't have any signs or anything, they would still be able to do virtual. So that was another option too. Even though the students was, may have been in contact with their student, the teachers were allowed to work virtually at home. So we had like two schedules, one for virtual and one for in-person.
So outside of work, how else has the pandemic affected your day-to-day activities?
Let's see. I know when we went out to eat, you know, there was limited. Of course, a lot of the restaurants weren't open on the inside. You could order and go get it. She ended up with it. She did get COVID. I did discuss that with her that it was okay for me to share that. So, it was just all of a sudden she was, you know, got up for work and everything. And then one morning she got up, she says, like, her body was aching and hurting and all that. And so she's like, this is crazy. What is going on? So I'm glad that they had the COVID nurse hotline. So she called them to notify them, because a lot of times they wouldn't let you into the hospitals, you know, for safety conscious. So she ended up with, they would call in her prescriptions and what to take for the symptoms that she was having, nauseous, dizziness. She did end up losing her taste and her smell. And of course, you know, always, and I'm glad that we all had our room. Me and my grandchildren, her sons, we all had to make sure we keep our mask on, you know, around her. And you can wave from a distance, but making sure that, you know, I would bring her food up and everything, make sure I had everything on, protect myself as well, and assist her while she wasn't feeling well. And also, I think sometimes, not just men, but it could be either men or women, that, you know, they wasn't feeling well. I checked on my relatives. But he was like, oh, my, it's just a cold. It's probably this or that. But he didn't sound good. I said, you sound like you don't sound like yourself. So I encouraged him to call the hospital, you know, emergency room, because he was even basically gasping for air. I'm like, you sound like you can't even breathe, you know. But he just tried to convince himself it'll go away. And I was like, by tomorrow, I really would like for you to call your doctor, because you don't really sound well. So I had, I called my aunt, which was, and I told her to call him and check back on him. So the next morning, she did. So she ended up calling the ambulance and had him to, they did come in. So that we just assumed they just, you know, they had their whole gear. I guess the ambulance came, they had the protective gear on, because we didn't know for sure if he had it, but he did have it. So we was grateful that we kind of, that tough love, get to the doctor, you know, and even though you think you're going to be all right, but he was diagnosed. He was in the hospital on the respirator. And then I think after that he did have to go to therapy, I guess, which I didn't know that they would probably have to learn how to walk and all that, you know. And of course he didn't like the hospital food, but that's a different story. and then from being like on prayer lines, you know, from church, listening to different prayer requests, you know, it kind of, when you keep hearing the stories about different people, loved ones, friends, family, passing from it, and I know several people that had passed from it, and it was kind of hard just knowing that they had passed or even just got it. It was kind of tough.
Yeah, so like you were just saying, you've known a lot of people, like in your family and just your friends that have had it, but I know earlier you mentioned that you really like celebrating like birthdays and holidays with your family and friends. So what was it like to celebrate those things during the pandemic?
It was a little different, because mostly the ones that, you know, when you so used to having all the family members come, we wasn't able to really invite them to come because a lot of them said no, you know, for safety precautions. I know that my children's father, you know, he's in a nursing home, so that way, because of the pandemic, we wasn't able to go visit him in the nursing home because of the, you know, the COVID. So that was kind of hard, especially it was around the holidays then, because used to coming to him around the holidays and celebrating with him, but it was no one, we weren't able to go see him. Now they said we could come to the window, but you know, but then they just said they didn't want anyone at all to come in there. Because at first I think they had changed it where one person, maybe two, take turns 15 minutes. Then they stopped the whole thing that no one can get, can visit. It was kind of different because no, you know, just having everyone in at the same time was not happening, you know, which is understandable.
So how have you seen people in Indianapolis respond to the pandemic?
I think it depends on the age group. I'm going to just say that because some age groups is like, oh, it's nothing. You know, they don't think it could happen to them. Older ones, older, you know, adults, they pretty much, you know, going to put it on. And there's maybe a few that didn't, you know, but I know majority of the older wore the mask. Some was gloves, you know, because you just, you know, or some, what was it? Especially going to the grocery stores, making sure we get all the stuff we need, you know, the paper towels, toilet paper. Everyone was, you know, the stores was lines and limited on a certain amount of you could buy. You can't buy no more than one. We're like, okay, so we, you know, we had to think of a plan. You know, my daughter get in line, she get in line, you know, because they was, and I can understand that. So they were, you know, real, which is a good thing because you don't want, because you've seen people that was loading up like with 10 to 20 bundles of toilet paper and people that needed it couldn't get it, you know, and find out they was trying to sell it. You know, that wasn't good, but nevertheless, yeah, going to the grocery stores was different, you know, because they had to set limits on how many you could purchase.
What have been your primary news sources during the pandemic?
What was the, say it again, I'm sorry.
What have been your primary sources of news during the pandemic?
Okay, primary, I'm sorry, let me turn this off. I'm sorry, sorry, me.
It's fine.
Okay, it's me. Okay, say it one more time.
What have been your primary sources of news during the pandemic? So, like, how have you been keeping up with, like, what's been happening and, like, different government policies?
CNN, listen to, the news, Fox 59, Channel 8, just all the news station. Also, AM 1310, gospel station, just to weather that way. And also, you know, word of mouth, because, you know, people that, I may have missed it, or sometimes I didn't really want to watch the news all the time because it was just too much going on at one time. But pretty much that was it.
What do you think are important issues that the media may or may not be covering?
I thought at one point that when they mentioned about the numbers, I kept saying, no, I still think it should have been more than that. But then at the very end, that's when it all went skyrocketed, so I knew it would sound more. They just probably didn't want to make people, you know, more nervous, which I can understand that as well, because, you know, people mentally, you know, that's a lot for anyone.
Do you have any thoughts on how local, state, or federal leaders are responding to the pandemic?
I know that a lot. Again, some of the churches in the community, Grace Apostolic Church, Mount Zion, New Day, Pentecostal, a lot of different churches in our community. The churches are getting involved with it because I know Mount Zion also have, I think this past weekend they had where you could make an appointment and get your vaccination, you know. So that was good. And how a lot of other locations, they're offering to get your COVID shot, which I have not yet got, but I will soon. But I'm just glad the resources are out there, and they are, you know, all the radio stations, television, even the media, you know, Facebook. You see a lot of people are commenting, you know, I got my COVID shot, you know, so that's kind of encouraging others, and other pastors in the community and great leaders in the community or encouraging one another, you know, like showing that they receive theirs, trying to encourage others, even the nurses, doctors, you know, others are trying to encourage us all to do that.
So you've mentioned different churches. Do you attend a specific church?
Yes, I attend Grace Apostolic Church.
How has that church specifically responded to the pandemic?
At the beginning, they started off, they did close the doors, because a lot of the churches did close the doors because of the, you know, the mayor decided to, you know, do that for the safety of the community. They would have like their services outside on the parking lot. So if they could sit in their cars or just stay by their cars. And so they would have a stand right by the door and, you know, have the praise and worship. And then the pastor would come with the word of God and even an invitation of salvation if they want to be saved. And they would give the phone numbers, you know, so if there's any concerns or if anyone had any questions, they would give their phone number. Also, like Bible studies, they would they do have the Zoom on there. Also, they did have like on was it FaceTime, Facebook Live. You can go on, click on there. On their website, and then it'll show the services. So if you want to type in some more comments or whatever, you know, as the services go. This was Sunday school, Bible study, and morning services. And mostly, most churches, I think they are doing it, because my aunt was saying the same, which is going with her church, Mount Carmel.
So you mentioned pre-COVID, you were pretty involved with Martin University, where you went to school. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
Yes.
Have they tried to make any adjustments to how their alumni community is interacting as the pandemic goes on?
Yeah, they making sure, they do have the scent, well, the spray. My daughter does work there. So, and the, you know, making sure that when individuals come in, that they would have to wear the mask. And so as the, I think most of the, what we were doing with that was most of them were like Zoom calls and not really in person. Because I know once the school, they started their classes, they had to come in on the first day of class. And then after that, everything was just virtual. So that was a good thing, because my daughter, Crystal, just finished her last class, so she'll be graduating in May. Yay. But yes, they basically, everything was virtual. But I know that when they went in person from working there as well, making sure everyone had their mask and hand sanitizer on the desk, and making sure they call before they come in to their office if they have any questions. But most of them, I think they worked from home, yes. So they, you know, they kind of like that because, you know, like I said, most companies and even schools, colleges, I've heard, you know, there were cases of it. And my son, I know my grandson, they called, because I think at the school that they attend, the high school, they had probably like sport basketball. You know, there was practice, and find out that they wanted to not tell the parents. So that was like, oh no, we can't do that. We have to tell our parents, you know. So not the staff, you know, children will be children. Oh no, you know, they love their sports, but it's like, no, we have to let our parents know because we, you know, we don't want to take it home to our loved ones. So they ended up having to, they did inform me that he didn't have it, but they just quarantined the whole team, the basketball team, so that, you know, it wanna be safe. And you know, they kind of tell me, okay, grandma, keep me in prayer. Okay. But he didn't have any symptoms. And so it was a good thing that a lot of the children did not have the symptoms.
All right. So after living through over a year of the pandemic, how have your thoughts and feelings toward COVID-19 changed?
More at ease since I'm familiar, you know, knowing the ins and outs about it, it kind of helped me a lot. So I can just, cause at first it's like everybody's on pins and needles. Okay, what am I doing? What am I supposed to do? You know, cause this is something new that's just hit all of a sudden. Now we kind of know, you know, we've been educated on what to do about it, how to prevent it, you know, not saying that it can't happen because sometimes you may not even have any symptoms. And I know there's some people that did not have symptoms but still end up with it.
So has your experience changed the way you think about your family, friends, or community?
I will say yes. I mean, I still love my people. You know, I still love my family, friends. It's just that sometimes we do have to let them know, girl, not today, you know, or, you know, it was kind of hard even with grandkids because, you know, grandchildren being able to go see them and visit because I wanted to go to Florida. Like, well, not at this time because it's just too much going on. So we would just, you know, FaceTime each other. But other than that, I think everyone is more at ease and not as, you know, nervous about it as well. You know, just making sure we take precautions of what the media and others are informing us what we need to do. Doctors, because, you know, there's doctors and frontline workers that really educated us as well. And give credit to them as well.
Knowing what you know now, what do you think that individuals, communities, or governments need to keep in mind for the future?
Not to take so long what people know, you know, because then it'd be so far, and it'd be so far into it, and then the rush of trying to figure out how we're going to fix this, you know. And so I would just think an early notification would be better than waiting till the numbers are so high you're out of control and no one knows what to do. You're just guessing, and it's new to everyone, of course, but just to keep, you know, and I can say that on the radio, they are, you know, they are giving statistics and, you know, informing us about these things, so, which is good. I think we all as a whole have been well educated, you know, learned from all these experiences, you know, even though there were sad times and good times, but being able to just come together as a community to work together to make this thing work.
How would you compare this pandemic to other big life events that have happened in your lifetime?
Honestly, I've never had anything like this experience in my life, but I've never really experienced anything like this, but I'm sure that, you know, others that have experienced this back in the past, like people that's in the military, you know, they have experienced a lot of different things similar. It can be a scary thing because a lot of times, you know, sometimes it's like some may say, well, you know, do you trust the government? They say this, or what are they really saying? You know, you want to read between the lines because sometimes they'll say one thing, but what are you really saying? You know, and so I think that's why a lot of times, as adults, we like Well, let me see what happens when they got this COVID shutout. Let's see what's going to happen first. Is it going to cause this happen to a person to get it, or they just run it trying to test us, you know, using this testing to, you know, there's a lot of comments about that. What are they really trying to do? So that's what it can be a scary thing. And it's, like I said, cause like in World War One or Two, or, you know, there were different things that they did. I think it was called Tuskegee, I think, and where they said, I'll just take this and your family be not, you know, well and free medical, this and that, and find out it wasn't what they said it was. So I think a lot of times they just afraid that, can we trust, you know, the health department or whoever, medicines that making all this stuff. Don't be using this as a guinea pig, because that's what people are saying, you know. I don't be testing like no guinea pig. You know, you just saying, come on, you know, they're just going to see what's going to happen. Let me see what happened to all, you know, the ones that decide to get the corona shot, immunization. So, and I can understand that because you just don't know. So.
All right. And then looking forward, what do you hope your life is like in a year?
In a year. Just continue being healthy and so I can be around, you know, continue to be able to fellowship, being around my friends and family, you know, and all that good stuff. I think that's about it. Just basically staying healthy and enjoying life.
All right. So those are all the questions that I have for you. Is there anything that wasn't asked or discussed today that you want to speak about?
Oh, yeah. When you mentioned something about something different, when they talk about the stimulus checks, I was going to mention that was something different, which was a good as a whole, because lots of people have lost jobs and needing of that the money to help support their families and those who had lost homes and jobs. So that was a difference, you know, because there were some people that I know that had to draw unemployment, but I was just grateful that the stimulus came, because that was a true blessing that the president, you know, allowed us to receive.
All right. Well, that's it. Thank you, Ms. Kirby, for agreeing to participate in this project.
Thank you. You both have a good rest of your day.
Thanks. You too.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.